It's time for Real Money with David Holland. Because David isn't just a radio personality, but also provides financial advice to clients, we must pause for a word from our compliance department.
David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, an investment advisory firm registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share common ownership under Holland Financial. The views and advice expressed by David Holland and guests are general in nature. No statements or opinions given during this radio program are to be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not to be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after a thorough analysis of an individual situation. An engagement of services to be offered are only in states where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. And now for the man who doesn't preach about cutting up credit cards, doesn't waste your time talking about which razor blades to buy, won't tell you to sell everything you own and buy gold, or ever use big words to impress you and talk over your head. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, David Holland.
Hi there. Welcome to the program. You know, I can preach and I do preach about financial planning and what you should be doing and how to do it, but it's not going to be about cutting up those credit cards because, well, that's your job. And if you need to cut them up, you cut them up. But if you've got them, I say keep them. Keep those credit cards. You never know when you might need them if there's an emergency. Don't want to carry a big balance, but that's a whole nother issue. So self-control, that's what it's all about. All right. Well, speaking of Mr. Self-Control sitting over there. Scott, how are you?
Terrific.
Yeah.
You?
I'm good. I'm good.
Excellent.
I'm ready for the show.
The fastest 5 minutes in finance with Scott Connor.
What do you say? New stuff? Good stuff? Quiet.
Yeah, Wednesday's market was a pretty boring market coming off of Tuesday's excitement, especially the mad dash at the end of the day. But Dow up 17 points, although that's a little misleading because 14 points of that was American Express.
Why are they up? Because is it their bank?
Yeah, they passed the bank test, which we'll talk about. NASDAQ about flat, still above 3,000 at 3040. S&P down 2 points, which is nothing. Oil down $1 to 105. Gold continues its drop for the week, down $51 an ounce to 1642.
Interesting. I'm going to talk about gold a little bit later in the program.
So volatile.
Yeah, it really is. 1642?
Yep, down 51 on the day.
That's a pretty big drop.
Yeah, gold is just so volatile, and you know, on the way up, it doesn't seem volatile because it just starts going up and it keeps going up. But when it reverses, and it has reversed violently a couple times in the last 9 months, it
what
can
was our
really
peak? What did we get to? About 1900,
18 and a half in there.
Okay, so we're off 200 points.
Yeah,
or $200.
Call that 12.
Say.
Call that 12%.
Yeah,
and it can move really, really, really fast, especially because most of the trades are done on margined futures contracts.
Yeah, and those things are really skittish.
Well, if you get a margin call, you have no choice.
You don't have a choice, right? Well, the thing that strikes me about gold, and I know you want to get to some other things, but just real quick, is that you've got a couple variables. Because it's a precious metal, but falls under the general category of commodity. And because of that, well, there's a commodity has a quantity, and there isn't always... especially with things that you have to mine or find, you know, they could all of a sudden find, you know, a billion metric tons of gold and be like, hey, wait a minute, this just was a game changer.
Yeah. All of a sudden it's quite a bit less precious. And
because it's so now all of a sudden the supply is enormous. So now you get gold for $5 an ounce instead of $16.42 an ounce.
Yeah. It's definitely a very, very different market than, you know, your standard equity and bond markets.
Well, I'm going to talk later in the program about things to watch out for with the whole gold pitch and especially gold stocks, but go ahead.
Well, not a whole lot else going on in the market. We'll talk about the bank stress test in a minute because I think that deserves some attention. Disney shares off again on Wednesday because of that John Carter movie that we talked about, just not doing well there. Goldman Sachs in the news, an executive quit. I know you want to talk about that. The only other really big news that I saw on Wednesday's market were the results of an Italian bond auction overnight, a three-year auction, 6 billion euros.
Okay.
2.76%.
You're kidding.
No.
That's low.
It's super low. It was 6% just back in November.
Wow.
Italy is Europe's biggest debtor, so if they're able to auction off $6 billion at 2.76 on a three, that's pretty good.
Okay, well, when we have the yield drop like that, ladies and gentlemen, there's only two. There's probably two explanations. One, the perception is risk is a lot less.
Yeah.
Because of all their austerity measures and they're doing better, or...
Now, it is a 3 year, so we're talking about short term.
You're right, you're right. So the perception is that the risk of them defaulting or having problems is much, much lower, or demand is really high. So which do you think it is?
I think it's risk, because the bid to cover was not overly strong.
So there was not a huge demand.
Yeah.
That worries me when there's a huge demand, because then that tells me that people are trying to get away from what they perceive to be more risky assets, although ironically maybe they're not, is the equity markets. And that makes me nervous when I start seeing that. So I don't want to see a real high bid to ask.
Yeah, it was really a good auction all around. So hopefully they can keep that trend up, and maybe we can see some auctions out of Spain and Portugal do the same thing, which we have seen a little bit of. But you know, I think for at least the foreseeable future, the real significant sharp worries about Europe are probably behind us.
You still have a pocket or two, though. You still have Portugal, who's over 14% on that same 3 year.
Yeah, and I say for the foreseeable future, okay. I mean for the next 6 months or so.
Oh, okay, you're not talking years. You're
talking
6 month view.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting stuff. All right, well, Lisa's flashing us with the 5 seconds, so by the time I finish talking, we'll go right to a quick break, and we'll be right back. Stick around.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read. You'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
Now it's time for a breakdown from Finglish to English.
Welcome back. Well, we're going to break it down some more here. I've got a surprise for you, Scott. I didn't give this to you in your show prep. Okay, so we'll get a good raw answer, ladies and gentlemen, from our portfolio manager, Scott Connor. There was a thing in the Daily Ticker, you know, on Yahoo, where the guy, what's his name? Jeff Mackey.
Yeah.
He does the Daily Ticker.
Purple pencil.
Yeah. And so he had an interview there with somebody, the guy that does the charting, and said there's three signs a market sell-off is coming soon. So he said basically that there are too many stocks over the 40-day moving average. Stocks have been going straight up for 3 months, and the market darlings are overbought like Apple. So when he says a market sell-off, you know, I don't know what he means by a sell-off. That might mean a 5, 10, or 20% pullback. Number one, what do you think about that? And number two, what do you think that means in terms of potential sell-off?
Well, I mean, I think a bunch of things about that. I think if you rely strictly on technicals, you have a problem.
Okay.
There is some value in technical analysis, and by technical analysis, we mean really analysis of charts.
It's looking at the behavior and the charting and where the stock's going, and is it above or below its average price for so long of a period of time.
Yeah, and there are a number of obscure oscillators and all these kind of things. A 40-day moving average is a very obscure one, so
it's
it
pretty
almost
short
makes
too.
Me...
Yeah, usually it's a 200-day, right?
Well, it can be a 50 or it can be a 200, but it's an obscure enough one that makes me think he was looking for something, because that's how Mackey
is.
And I also think that, what was the second point you made?
Second one was stocks have been going
For 3 months. Well, they've really been going up longer than that, other than the correction we had back in the fall. But, I mean, generally speaking, trends are much longer than a handful of months. They're more like 3 to 5 years.
I mean, this is almost like day trading.
Yeah, that's how Mackey is. But it's a good point to illustrate that you have to consider the source of all this unbelievable multitude of information.
It's a sea of information.
Yeah, and Mackey is a short-term technical trader. If that's the kind of investing that you want to do, he's probably a good resource. But for guys like us, he might as well be speaking French, because it doesn't mean a thing to me.
Well, I tell you what it means to me. One of the things here, he says, he's got a quote, "It's not a sin to be wrong, but staying wrong will kill you. If you're on the sidelines and you're itching to go into the market, you should start thinking ways to relieve that tension so you don't make a mistake." So God, he says, God forbid you're short and you better put in some stops, yada, yada, yada. So the point is, though, is I think that holds water, though. I like that comment because, you know what? It's okay to be wrong, but just don't be wrong long.
Yeah.
And I see that with people that get themselves too much in one company.
Yeah.
Or they stay in one company.
Yeah.
I had a guy one time that, and it's not the same guy I write about in the book, Mr. Jones, where I talk about the guy that had the one stock and it was a technology stock. I had a guy that had a bellwether, kind of a blue chip stock, and it was GE. And he had all, pretty much all of his money in it. And I got him to sell it, most of it, at about $35 a share. Well, geez, it went all the way down to $5 a share, and it's gotten back up. Maybe it's, what, high double digits, or not double digits, but high 16, 18, 19, somewhere in there.
I think it's mid-20s.
Okay, mid-20s now. So, but the point is, at the time, it really dropped. So, you know, it's you got to be careful with being long or wrong in this kind of situation.
Well, and it's always good to remember to not fall in love with stocks because they don't fall in love back.
They do not fall in love with you. You're exactly right. They are
1979 on Wednesday's close.
Okay. All right. Well, that's something I just wanted to get your raw reaction to. I think the thing is you got to really look at this and you're trying to time the market. You know, a lot of people are frustrated saying, "Oh, I've got this money. I want to go in, but I got to wait for it to pull back."
Yeah.
It may not pull back for another 2 years.
Yeah. And we're investing for a long way down the road, not the end of spring.
Our typical portfolio, like our growth portfolio, Scott, what would you call our time horizon for that investment?
I would say minimum 3 years. But
yeah, I was going to say
like,
five.
Yeah, more like 10 is comfortable.
Yeah, 5 to 10.
Yeah.
So if you're investing in the market and you don't consider yourself a day trader, the money you put in the stock market really needs to be invested with a view that you're not going to be using that money, or at least not a lot of it, cashing in to buy a new car or cashing in to put your kids in school, college, whatever, for 5 to 10 years.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, I just wanted to throw that at you. That was in my stack that we didn't get a chance to talk about before the show. Where are you going next?
You want to talk stress test?
Yeah, let's do that.
The Fed did a bank stress test, or as I should say, announced the results of a bank stress test. And we talked a little bit about it yesterday. And I had said earlier in yesterday's, one of yesterday's radio appearances, that the Treasury had done this, but it was the Fed that did this. And they basically said of the 19 largest banks in the United States, 15 of them passed the stress test, 4 did not pass.
You don't want to be one of those 4.
No, those 4 were Citigroup, shockingly Citigroup, Ally Financial, SunTrust, which surprised me, and MetLife. And really what that means is the Fed tells them, you guys are not
solid enough
to issue a dividend. You're not solid enough to do a share buyback. And if we think you're really not solid enough, we can force you to raise more money by selling stock or something of that nature.
And they did that back in 2009. The Fed ordered 10 banks to raise a total of $75 billion. Bank of America alone was told to raise $34 billion.
Yeah, and this particular stress test was much harder to pass than the last one. This one says, if the stock market goes down 50%, we have 13% unemployment. Are you guys going to make it? And these other 4, the answer was no. But I think 15 out of 19 is pretty good, and the market did react nicely to that on Tuesday.
Well, I talk about being in an uncompetitive position. You know, somebody like a J.P. Morgan versus Citigroup. I mean, and you can see in the reaction with their stock prices. In fact, I looked at a chart courtesy of Wall Street Journal that had 52-week share performance for J.P. Morgan, Citigroup, Bank of America, and boy, J.P. Morgan pretty much is back even,
but
Citigroup and Bank of America nowhere near.
Yeah, they have a very dynamic CEO there in the form of Jamie Dimon. And when we come back, I want to tell you about Goldman Sachs, another big bank, and some reasons there in the headlines on Wednesday.
All right, well, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
If you like what you hear, you'll love what you see. Watch Real Money with David Holland, the TV show, Mondays at 12:30 p.m. on WESH Channel 2. Are you gambling with too much money invested in the stock market? How can you tell? It's simple. The rule of 100. Take your age and subtract it from 100. The result is how much you might want to keep in the market. The rest should be off the table, invested in something safe. Every rule has an exception, but the rule of 100 is a good starting point to determine if your portfolio is out of balance. Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
We're back. And next up, talking about all that glitters may or may not be gold, Goldman Sachs is all over the news.
Yeah, they had a this is a very, very rare occurrence. They had an executive who was the head of one of their important sectors in
based trading,
in,
right?
Based in London. Yeah, derivatives, American derivatives based in London, basically. And he wrote a letter to the Wall Street Journal that said, "I'm a Goldman Sachs executive, and today is my last day. I quit. And here's why. Because Goldman Sachs used to be a terrific place that was focused on helping clients," I'm paraphrasing, obviously, "and now the only thing they care about is making a buck, and they don't care about their clients, and they'd run them over with a bus if they thought they could make a couple bucks on it."
Well, he said that they call them Muppets. The clients, they call them Muppets. And you know, of course, Muppets are cute, cuddly things over here in the United States, but in Britain, UK, the reference is not so nice, and it's people that aren't so bright.
Yeah, they really, and he really calls out leadership and the CEO and the president specifically, and says, you know, we got where we got to after 140 years of history by helping clients and earning trust in clients. And he said, now the only thing we do is we look for ways that we can make as much money trading stuff. So, you know, it's like selling bonds out of inventory. Who are you trying to help if you're selling bonds out of your own inventory?
Amen. Amen. I can't agree with that one more, Scott. That's one of the things that's always baffled me is when a company says, "Hey, we got these bonds, we bought them, and they got them as part of the, you know, the issuance by the underwriting and all that for the company, and we've got them and we're going to sell them to you because they're so good." Well, if they're so good,
yeah, hang on to them.
Hang on to them. Why are you selling them to me?
Yeah.
And then they get a markup. Yeah. And a lot of people don't understand that they might have bought that bond. Let's just say they bought it for $10. And they're going to sell it to you for what, 12?
Yeah.
13?
And then they get you on the other side. I had to actually sell a bond for a client today. It was certainly not a bond that we bought for them. But if you look at the statement or look at the account online, it says the bond is worth 106. That's the quote. And then I call in to sell it. It's a 5,000-piece bond, and they want to give 103.
Wow.
And they're keeping the difference because they're going to sell it for 106, but they're going to give us 103. The bond market is a very dangerous place for individual investors.
It really is. And I remember back in 2008, we had a client that hired us to manage their money. And they, at the similar thing, they had a bunch of individual bonds. And they, at the time, we couldn't find a buyer.
Yeah.
Nobody wanted it. The bond, the fixed income side of the market was frozen up like a big lake.
And the last thing they want is a 5,000-piece bond, because that's not how they operate.
Well, but what client wants a 5% loss on that bond?
That's right. So I mean, nobody wins, really.
Yeah, so everybody loses, and all we're trying to do is manage the account and get the proper level of risk and diversify them.
Yeah, but I will say, in contrast to what this executive is finding at Goldman Sachs, my experiences with individual RIA firms, registered investment advisory firms, and most other firms, certainly that I've worked with, I worked with Charles Schwab for a long time, the client is the first focus. So I think this is not an industry-wide problem. Although, from what I've been hearing out of Goldman Sachs and people that I have known there in the past, that culture has changed quite a bit to become more of a headhunter type of
place. Well, they went from being a partnership to being a publicly traded entity,
right.
And that also changed the dynamics. You know, and here's another example. Coincidentally, and I'm sure it's not an accident they're writing about it, but the United States government sued three firms, but they fined Goldman Sachs, a unit, over customer funds. Now, this is no small fine. They fined them the, it's called the CFTC. That's the commodities group.
Yeah.
Anyway, they fined Goldman Sachs $7 million. That's an attention getter there.
Yeah.
That's real money. Not with David Holland, but that's real money that Goldman Sachs is going to be writing a check for, and because they made some mistakes with handling a brokerage account.
Yeah, so I think really that all these things, you put together this mosaic of things, and there probably is some work to be done at Goldman Sachs for them to restore themselves to their previous luster.
Well, the mosaic of glass, I don't know, broken glass, glass house, glass in your eye, not good. You know, another one to talk about while we're on the subject of brokers, Merrill Lynch is having their share of challenges right now.
Yeah, they just never, that whole Bank of America purchase, just the culture
never merged.
Nope.
Well, they have a lot of brokers who are not happy about the fact that some of them say, and then I think this is from, let me see where I got this. Always cite my sources, ladies and gentlemen. This is from Reuters, and they have a report, and that some of the advisors have been riled by the pressure, upset about the pressure to sell what they say is to cross-sell Bank of America loans and services, and some of them have left. And it's actually ripped a pretty good-sized hole in them.
Well, they're losing their experience.
They're losing their deep, strong legacy advisors, they call them. Some of these guys having 20, 30 or more years of experience and
who
managing
can bring their clients with them.
And they're going to, and you know what they're going to do, Scott? They're going to either go to work for another brokerage firm.
Or they're going to go RIA.
Who's going to pay them money, or they're going to do what a lot of advisors have done over the years is go independent and set up a registered investment advisory firm. And you know what is one of the number one things about being a registered investment advisor is if you're managing money for a fee, client has hired you to be their investment advisor. They've formally hired you with an agreement. Every one of our clients has an agreement that they give us the authority to manage your account. Fiduciary responsibility. Yeah. We don't have a choice. We have to put the client's interest first or the regulators will be all over us.
Yeah, now I do think that that's how most people in the industry
I think you're right. But
not always.
But there's also some inherent conflict or challenges like with the markup. Yeah. It's like, well, wait a minute. The whole broker-dealer concept. Right now I'm being a broker. Well, right now I'm being a dealer.
Right.
Did you notice, client? Did you notice, customer? I changed. Broker, you get paid a commission for buy. They go out and they buy the stock and then they buy it for you. And they're acting as your broker, like a real estate broker or a food broker, whatever kind of broker, commodities broker. But when they switch over to acting in this dealer function, now they're dealing with you between them and you. And so there's some inherent conflicts. It's like now their responsibilities change and they are now selling from their inventory for as much as they can get, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if they bought it for 10, they sell it for 15. They're going to make the $5 a share. That's a lot of money compared to just getting, you know, whatever it is, a couple $100 commission for the trade.
Yeah.
Well, it's why a lot of people look to get fee-based money management and hiring an independent investment advisor. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
Welcome back. I hope you're enjoying the program today. We're kind of shaking it up and digging deeper into some of these issues. Another thing that we need to dig into or bite into, I should say, is Apple stock.
It's another big day Wednesday.
Yeah, and it's everywhere.
Yeah.
It's held. Get this. This is an amazing statistic. Apple right now is held by 1/3 of all U.S. stock mutual funds.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
That tells me a lot of things. At first, it tells me that a lot of the buying pressure that Apple has experienced in the last...
Mutual funds.
Yeah, 6 months has been mutual funds. But it also tells me that it's in a lot of places it doesn't belong.
Well, does it belong in a small or mid-cap stock fund?
It doesn't.
Does it belong in a dividend-paying fund?
No.
Maybe, maybe not. Yeah.
Well, it doesn't pay a dividend.
Not right now, it doesn't. They're buying, some of these dividend mutual funds are buying it for the upshot that they think it's going to turn into a dividend-paying stock.
Yeah.
And when it does, the stock price will jump and there'll be, of course, money coming in from the dividends.
Yeah, but it's really a problem if you're trying to build a diversified portfolio. We spend a lot of time keeping an eye on what we call style drift, where if we're hiring a mutual fund to be a large cap growth fund and all of a sudden they're buying a lot of mid cap companies or value oriented companies, it screws up the balance in the whole portfolio, which is a problem for a guy like me. So we pay very close attention to style drift.
Well, that's very important. And on top of that, we've got to do a double check. And this is something actually we do with all of the people that come in to meet with us about their portfolios and kind of give them that second opinion, is we'll do the stock intersection analysis. How's that for a fancy word?
Yeah.
Basically, we take all of their mutual funds and investments, squish them together, break them apart, and see what they hold across all mutual funds. And we might find, for example, that Apple's in so many of these different stock funds that they might have 5% Apple and not know it.
Right. Yeah, so, it reminds me a lot of the late 90s and early 2000s, where if you broke apart any mutual fund,
and technology stocks,
it was all technology fund. There were some fund families that were notorious. Even if you looked in the overseas fund, it was Intel, Cisco, Microsoft, and we saw what happened there. So you have to be very, very careful and know what's in the stuff that you're in.
I think that's the lesson. I think that's the exact lesson from this Apple being, very tempting for a lot of mutual funds, not wanting to miss out on the growth, wanting to see the whatever they may do. They got $100 billion in cash now. And what are they going to do with the money? They've got three choices. They either use it to do some of the acquisitions we've talked about. They send the money back in the form of a dividend to the shareholders, or they buy back shares.
They've been doing okay doing nothing with it, though. They don't have to do anything.
They do not have to do anything. There's nobody going to tell them they have to do it, right?
And they think differently than most other companies.
That's why they are who they are.
Right. And Steve Jobs said specifically, the job of this cash is to be cash. So they might not do anything with it.
Well, the more cash they get, is that going to hurt their stock value? No.
Apparently not. Now, if interest rates go up, that cash becomes a lot more valuable than it is right now. Right now, it returns nothing.
Well, then maybe that's part of the thought process.
Yeah.
Century bonds. This is a fun one. Okay, so with low interest rates, you just mentioned the lower interest rate environment. The United Kingdom, Britain, is weighing the possibility of going super long with their bonds, basically locking in the lower interest rates and their current comparative financial strength, you know, kind of compared to the other European countries, and go with something that could be even as long as a 100-year bond.
Yeah, it's a great deal for the issuer at these interest rates.
Oh, well, and the big question, the 100-year question, is would people do it?
I bet some people would do it, but the real value in that, not only is it low interest rates, but can you imagine what the value of a pound is going to be 100 years from now? They'll be borrowing for every 100 pounds, they'll be paying back the equivalent of, I don't know, maybe
30 cents.
Yeah, something like that. I just love that the title of Mr. Osborne is the UK Chancellor of the Exchequer.
I see that.
I like that title.
And that's kind of a cool title. And they even talked about the possibility of perpetual bonds, where they, and you know what struck me about that is they never have a redemption date.
Yeah, they've done it. They've done perpetual
and they've
bonds.
Done that back in the 19th century, right? And after World War
One. After World War I, yeah.
Well, here's what's interesting is that when they do that, that you know what that strikes me, reminds me of very substantially, is a preferred stock.
Yeah, absolutely.
A lot of preferred stocks don't have a maturity date.
Yeah, and if you hand it down from generation to generation to generation, I mean, it's basically like an annuity for all the everybody.
You know, we could all
to.
Buy century bonds from UK, and we could all feel like we're part of the royal family. Pass those down the generation.
All right.
You'd like that. You got a Scotch background, right?
Irish.
Sorry. I was close. I'm Scotch-Irish, so I got both of them. All right. Well, speaking of not Scotch nor Irish, China, I wanted to mention this. This is interesting. It's kind of a story behind the story, like you say. It's kind of in the background. China is believed to have made a very large corn purchase. And what's interesting about that is, first of all, they kind of do this secret purchase where they don't want anybody to know.
Yeah, they do that with bonds, too.
And I think they do that just because they want to kind of keep a low profile and not really signal their intentions.
Well, if everybody knows China's buying something, everybody's going to buy it. And then the price goes up before
they
buy it.
And they don't
want
to have to then buy it again at a higher price because they already purchased 4 million metric tons of corn the current year. And it was only 1 million last year. And a lot of that has to do with the buying habits changing, the consumer habits changing. Chinese want more red meat.
Yeah, and their domestic corn prices have it's actually cheaper for them to buy corn from us than it is to buy corn from their own people. A lot of that is because of what has happened to real estate prices there.
That's pretty amazing. Lisa, where are we at? Got about a minute. All right. What do we got left for a minute? What do you got left over in your stack? You want to hear about gold stocks, some of the warnings from FINRA?
Sure.
Listen to this. FINRA, of course, is they're the regulatory oversight for 600,000 some odd brokers around the country, and they have an alert out. We talked about gold at the beginning of the program. Well, there are, I won't say innumerable, but there are a lot of scams out there about gold, and here are some of the warning signs. They'll have a price target that's based on swift and exponential growth. Reminds me of your Glacier story. You'll have to tell that again sometime. They talk about the gold stock being a buyout target for other mining companies. They talk about the stock, the actual performance of the actual stock itself tied to the gold
is
spot
penny,
price.
Penny stock stuff?
No, this is just regular straight up gold stocks. Not all of them are penny stocks. Listen to this. They had the Securities and Exchange Commission took legal action against a mining company that was based in Florida for false press releases, all kinds of misleading statements. They said they had gold reserves worth $1 billion. And here's another one. The CFTC, which is the commodities folks, they charged a precious metal firm in Florida for running a boiler room filled with just full of fraud and bilked out investors over $23 million. So be careful with the gold stocks and I'll talk more about this on a future program. Watch out for those gold lunches, too. All right, we're out of time. Thanks for joining us. Thank you, Scott. We'll see you next time.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.
You load 16 ton, what do you get? another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.